Pink Whale Nuts Garage.
Go ahead. Hi, folks. Here we go. It's the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage.
And a one, and a two, and
oh, this is a fuck.
What would you fight? Why are you fighting for this?
I just want to make it clear that this is all Brenda's fault. I even asked her if she was ready.
Oh, yeah, I'm ready. I tried this.
We'll have to hum the theme.
This is podcasting gold here, folks. Podcasting gold.
Podcasting gold.
It says there's something wrong with my sound device. I don't know.
All right. Well, let's just assume the music has played by now. How about that?
I didn't do anything differently than I normally do.
Ruined.
Laughing Buddha, take it away.
Hello, everyone. This is the co-host emeritus, the Laughing Buddha, welcoming you to a very expensive or very cheap live edition of the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage. And our chief head accountant bean counter is Faye Driver. Faye, do you have an accounting joke for us?
Oh, I always have an accounting joke in my back pocket.
All right. Well, why don't you whip it out?
Why did the accountant cross the road?
I don't know. Why did the accountant cross the road?
To bore the people on the other side.
Womp, 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 womp.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us here on the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage on this fine March Friday. We are just a day or two away from turning our clocks, I guess, forward.
Oh, that's right.
I am a non-proponent of the daylight saving time. But anyway, how does everybody feel about daylight saving coming up? Actually, maybe before you answer that question, we should hold to the format. It's been kicked off. The can has been kicked off the rails here by the music not starting, and my whole day is ruined.
Ruined.
So let me see. Let me start introducing guests, and then we'll talk about daylight saving time. Let's see. Now, Musing Mark, you join us here tonight. Hello, Mark.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Now, you have had some drastic surgery occur for you. Do you want to tell us where you've been?
I've been to Switzerland. I'm becoming a woman.
Congratulations.
No, actually, I went to Vancouver, and I had a gum graft. Because I had some receding gums in the front. So what they do is they hack off a slice up on your palate and they move it down to cover up that spot. So for the last couple of days, I've been a little sore, been hopped up on Tylenols with codeine. Woohoo!
Wow, good for you.
Yeah, got the good stuff.
Mr. Anderson had this surgery done.
Mm.
And he said the most painful part wasn't the surgery site. It was the part where they took the piece of skin out of the palate. So are you experiencing the same amount of pain?
No, it's the opposite for me. The what they call the donor site, where they scrape off up on the palate, it doesn't hurt at all. And it's the front. When my pain pills wear off, it feels like somebody socked me straight in the mouth.
Oh, my goodness.
So, but that's getting better. It's not so bad. Every day it gets a little better.
Well, good. I'm glad to see that you're feeling well enough to join us here tonight and that you even got out a Musing Mark episode too, just about an hour ago.
Yes. But just let me know if I get too chatty or giggly, because the Tylenols with codeine tend to have that effect. So if I'm talking too much, just let me know.
All right. Well, let me introduce the other folks who are joining us tonight. We are joined by Eric from Iowa. Hello, Eric.
Hello. How is everybody?
I'm fine. Everybody?
We're good.
Yeah.
I'm just in stitches.
Great.
Oh, no. Good ones.
Badoon-chick.
Eric is joined by the producer. I want to make sure she gets this title properly assigned. The producer of...
Yes, the executive producer and boss of Lotzel.
Right.
Boss of Lotzel, boss of Lotzel.
I am the boss of Lotzel, you know. Hello, everybody.
Good evening, Brenda.
Good evening.
How are you tonight?
I'm good. I'm really happy because stuff is starting to melt. Eric's having some kind of spasm.
No, I just find it funny, the face, like, hey, everybody, hey, everybody. Hey, Brenda, how are you?
We have a show together, you know.
And please, now, I have a coup de grace here that I want to tell everyone about, or some, maybe not a coup de grace, but a coup in no less a coup. And that is a new guest here on the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage, and that is Calvin from Hello Waffles. Hi, Calvin.
Hi, Faye.
I feel very honored that you are joining us here this evening.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm honored to be here.
Welcome to the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage. Now, I was teasing you a little bit earlier on Twitter about how we were going to dissect you a little bit.
Well, we could talk about your and Brenda's dreams, too.
Oh, yeah, sure. Actually, something I want to talk to you about is your March Pod Pomo that you're doing now.
Yes, the March Madness.
Yes. Some other people who listen to the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage may know that I'm not a fan of Napod Pomo.
Yes,
you.
I remember that.
In November.
You're a detractor from that as well.
Just
except
one
for
of
when
the
I
things.
Do it.
Only one of the things that I'm a detractor of is the Napod Pomo. But actually, I'm enjoying immensely the Hello Waffles March Madness.
Oh, well, thank you. I thought, you know, well, if everybody else does it in November, maybe it'll be somewhat more supportive of everyone's listening schedule if I do this some other time. And I really liked listening to other people's... I'm going off. Sorry, I'm taking over.
No, please go on.
I liked listening to other people's daily posts because I feel like it gave me sort of a different... like feeling and perspective that I felt like I got sort of a more direct look sort of at their lives that I really liked. Mm-hmm. So I'm experimenting with that.
Yes. Good. Well, I think we're all enjoying it here, eh, folks?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Jeez.
I have several questions for you, Calvin, but we're going to carry on with the show. And Laughing Buddha, if you can tell us who's joining us tonight. From Pride 48 in the Pride 48 chat room, please.
Yes, joining us this evening in the chat room is the mysterious Cronehaven, Kathy Bacon, Ranger John, RT Cruiser, Timmy Sims is in the room, as is Toppy Smelly, and Scotty the little Aussie battler is doing laundry and is idle.
Right. Well, welcome everybody, and thanks for joining us here tonight. And then I guess we should do drinks, and then I want to get back to grilling Calvin about his March Madness. So I'll tell you what I'm drinking. I've been experimenting today. I hope it's not coming through.
Uh-oh.
I've been drinking martinis since noon. No, no, not true. But what I'm drinking right now is a lemon sunset. Now, does anybody want to know what a lemon sunset is?
I am dying to know. Would you please let us know what a lemon sunset is?
This is a martini made from one part gin, one part lemon juice, like a lemon-lime lemonade type of a juice. And then it is garnished with a large slice of grapefruit. And that
how exotic.
Lemon sunrise. It's delicious. In fact, I have two of them lined up waiting for me here because I'm almost finished the first one. What about you, Laughing Buddha? What are you having tonight in the garage?
Well, this evening I thought I'd keep things simple, and I'm enjoying a 2012 California Shiraz by Charles Shaw. And you know, affectionately known in those people who shop at Trader Joe's as Two Buck Chuck.
So, oh.
Well, it's $2.99 here in the Minnesotas, but just a lovely Shiraz, you know, keeping it simple, keeping it real, and keeping it on my budget.
Right. You've had actually a bit of a tough week, I think, once again. Haven't you, Laughing Buddha? Do you want to tell us about your week?
My week has been rather busy. We just cannot seem to get caught up at work. And I was traveling last weekend, and I had an epiphany, and I'm going to talk about this on the next Scooter Diaries podcast, which I intend to record sometime this weekend. But I kind of had an epiphany. I traveled to visit a friend of mine in Milwaukee, and she's very wise, and we've been friends for a long time. And she said, you know, Mark, the things that you've been describing sound kind of like burnout. So, it's been kind of pointed out to me that I am burnt out, and I need to work on that. So we're working on relaxing and kind of building up some reserves. But there is light at the end of the tunnel. My supervisor will be going on vacation next week.
So oh, wonderful.
I'll be able to catch up on what needs to be caught up. But I almost did it today, but not quite. So I'm sure by the end of next week, things will be back to normal, whatever normal is.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll hope for that.
Thank you.
Mark, I presume you're drinking water so that you can slug down your Tylenol, or are you having something else?
Yes, an hour ago I had a Tylenol number 3, and I washed it down with some 2014 BC still tap water.
Oh, yes. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Eric, what are you drinking tonight?
Well, it's been a hard week, Faye, let me tell you. But I was hoping my spouse would take me out to dinner tonight, so I don't have anything in my stomach. So I'm just drinking bread.
It's Harvey Feinstein.
I'm sorry.
It's straight from the can, because that's just the kind of girl I am.
You're a girl.
Okay, wait a minute. I didn't quite get that. You're drinking what?
It's a Fresca, darling.
Oh, love Fresca.
How very pure of you.
Yes, grapefruit soda. Love it.
Right. Actually, you know it's a favorite here on the Pink Wheelers Garage.
Really?
Oh, I'm a fan of Fresca. I love Fresca.
Oh, my God. So we have something in common.
We do.
So good.
Maybe Brenda? We should find a sponsor.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Are you having Diet Coke in a sippy cup?
I sure am.
All right.
Pepsi.
Okay. My lesbian lover over here has corrected me.
And Calvin, are you enjoying a beverage this evening?
I have a mason jar from City Pulse Acupuncture filled with water.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, it's fun because the top has this hole in it that you put a straw in that I have so the cats won't drink my water.
Oh, yes, you must protect your water. You don't want any interspecies diseases either, you know.
No, I heard about those.
Hmm. Folks, tonight on the Pink Wheelnuts Garage, we're going to tackle a somewhat significant topic, and that is about money and career and retirement. And I do want to get into that topic, but we a couple of things we need to talk about first. One is that Laughing Buddha has a road trip question. And we're going to get to that in a minute, but I want to come back to Calvin, because in listening to your March Madness, one of your really interesting episodes was the episode where you tacked on at the end of the show the chanting that you were doing with your was it a teacher or
no? That's just JR. That's
oh, that was JR.
Yes.
So and you had this very long, complicated chant that you did, and I need to know, is this something you actually memorize, or is it something you read?
I don't have that one memorized, no. I mean, I can probably, whatever, I mean, I really like it, so I could probably rattle off a bunch of portions of it, but no, I don't, mm-hmm. I mean, there's
It was
no,
highly complex.
Well, it's got a lot of different things going on in it. So, yeah. And it's got a lot of different sort of old cultural references, which are not immediately apparent. Some things relate to trigrams and whatnot. That anyway, I don't want to bore everybody with like technical explanations, but.
But it's like it is a bit of a collection of probably a lot of concepts that you study or that you consider in your meditation, though, mm-hmm. I presume.
Right. It's actually a really sort of concise. Some people would say that was considered the word you might use is transmission, that was held somewhat privately so as not to give people too much information too quickly, but it's supposed to be very concise and distilled, and it's really supposed to be, you could say about, you know, what happens when you're sitting, but in a way, what is, you know, your way that you encounter the world and how just how that takes place.
Mm-hmm. Well, I found it extremely interesting.
Oh, thank you.
I couldn't keep up. Like it was very complex.
Right? That's good.
Is that meditation? Are you talking about transcendental meditation?
No, it's not like TM. Although I'll admit I don't know too much about TM. The last person I asked said that TM is typically when somebody gives you a mantra, which you repeat sort of over and over and over.
Maybe we can just describe for people who may not listen to Hello Waffles, but you are quite heavily involved in Buddhism,
right?
And study it intensely.
Yeah, I don't want to stink of it, you know, for everybody. We really don't have to talk about it.
Okay, we don't need to talk about it, but.
I'm not saying I'm uncomfortable talking about it. It's just my, so you know a little bit of my background. Growing up Mormon, we had so much sort of efforts at proselytizing that I always feel like I don't want to give people this impression that I'm trying to evangelize in any way.
Right. Sounds like the bus is here.
He lives in San Francisco.
Oh, okay. Now, Mark, have you been listening to his meditation stories, and do you find similarities? I mean, because I know when you were doing your retreats, you didn't see anything.
Actually, I have to admit, I haven't listened to any podcast this week, so I'm letting Calvin's build up, but I'm sure there's some commonality. We've actually done a couple shows about the Buddhism on my show, so yeah.
The Buddhism. I'd like to talk about someday the Mormonism with Calvin. You could be on my show. I'd like to hear about this.
That'd be great. Sure.
All right. Well, let's move on. Well, thanks, Calvin.
Thanks.
So be advised that I am enjoying the March Madness on Hello Waffles. And why don't you just tell people right now where we can find the Hello Waffles podcast?
Oh, unfortunately, I'm not very good at this whole interwebs thing. I have a Podomatic account that I think also has an attendant RSS feed that you can get to. You could just go to, you know, the BFO and click on his link there under how to do pancakes. Just go there.
It's on iTunes.
It is on iTunes, but there's no space between Hello and Waffles.
All right. You're also on Twitter as H3LLO Waffles.
That is correct.
All right. Great show. Now, before we get into the heavy duty topic, we got to have a car chat question just because, I don't know, there's some unwritten rule that we need to talk about cars on the Pink Winnet's Garage. So, Laughing Buddha, we've already heard you've been traveling. You traveled last weekend.
That's right.
What is up with you and your road trip?
Okay, well, it's kind of partially a rant, but the question part, you know, comes after that, okay?
All right, rant away. We'll all sit back.
I'm just hoping Trucker Alex isn't listening to this or in the chat room at the moment because I'm going to malign his profession. One of the things that really ticked me off on this road trip is passing 18-wheelers. And those 18-wheelers that are like slightly larger than, older regular 18-wheelers that really take up the entire lane.
Sure. The really big ones.
Yeah, the really big ones. And, you know, one of the things, when I'm driving, I am constantly in a defensive driving mode. I don't trust that anyone sees me, is paying attention, and will probably kill me given the chance. Okay. That's kind of the way I approach when I'm driving is I'm paying hyper attention.
That's how you approach driving, and that's how Brenda Boo approaches life in general.
Yeah, exactly. And what happens is, you know, there are fairly stringent laws when it comes to semi-trailers and how fast people are going, how long they can drive, logs, you know, all of these rules and regulations. But what I find interesting is that these guys will bunch up, and instead of just having to pass one, you have to pass four.
Mm.
And then the flip side of that is when one semi is passing another, they get into this guy thing. And I don't know, they want to see whose balls are bigger. And so what happens is they take up both the left lane and the right lane, and it takes the guy who's trying to pass the other semi about 3 miles to pass somebody.
Right.
And meanwhile, the rest of us are in the left lane in the back trying not to get boxed in. So my question is, what is a good strategy? How do you pass these guys safely without getting yourself into trouble?
Uh-huh. Very good question. Does anyone have any advice for Laughing Buddha?
Take Greyhound.
No. I say, even though I would regret the comment, I will let that slide. Most truckers are pretty good about giving you information. So like if they flash their lights, if you're approaching them, sometimes that means there's cops around. Or if they flash their, what do you call it when they flash the lights in the back? The
brake lights?
Brake lights, yeah.
Yeah, but
backup lights,
flasher lights that they'll signal to you that like you can pass now and everything. Mm-hmm. I think if you make eye contact sometimes with these truckers, they'll actually assist you. Because
you're behind them. In this case, you're behind the guy.
But if you're going to go around him and you can see in the big rear view mirror, mm-hmm. sometimes you can make eye contact with them.
Right. Well, the one thing that really ticked me off is I was on my return trip home, and I was passing a semi, and I was getting to the cab part of the semi-trailer, and he started to drift into my lane. Mm. So I had to punch it and to pass him, and I looked in my rearview mirror at him, and this fucknut was reading a book. As he was driving. And I'm like going, you got to be kidding me.
Well,
I know exactly what you mean, you know, because that happens and I get so perturbed because then I have to look up for my movie. And I'm like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the thing, you know, truckers just want you to get away from them, I think.
Yeah.
And typically cars are much more powerful and have the ability to get up, increase their speed, pass, and get around in front of and away from the trucker. So I think they would much rather that if you are going to pass, that you make that known and get out there and do it. And just do it, get it over with, put your foot to the floor, as somebody said in the RT Cruiser says in the chat room. And get out of their way. And then the sooner that you pass them, then they can get out and do their passing that they want to do.
Can I ask you a question, Mark?
Sure.
When all this was going on and you were swerving, did you spill your dirty martini at all?
No, I didn't. As a matter of fact, I always travel with a sippy cup.
That's good.
It had a cover on it.
Excellent.
I think the problem with the truckers is that they're so heavy and it's very difficult for them to move all of the mass that they have. So when they want to pass, they don't have the power, or in many cases, their trucks are governed and they can't go faster than a set speed because the truck is set to not allow them to go any faster than X number of miles. So when they want to pass, they can't exceed that limit. Like the rest of us, it's much easier for us to get our cars up to 80 miles an hour to get around somebody, but they don't have that luxury.
But why doesn't the other trucker in the right lane slow down so that this guy can pass him?
Because I can tell you this. I used to work for a very brief time at a trucking company. And the fact that I left there.
What have you not done, Brenda? Anyway.
Tell him Large Marge sent you.
This is something to be proud of. You've done everything. Anyway, carry on. You worked for a trucking company.
And I know that. Shut up. I hate you all so much.
You don't.
Oh, I know. Anyway, truckers view the interstate as their office. And us little cars are just a bunch of amateurs getting in their way. So the fact that people are trying to get around two trucks that are side by side is of no consequence to them because they know that they could smash you at any second. There's so much weight behind them. They simply don't care. That's what I'm saying.
I'm going to defend the trucker. I'm going to defend Trucker Alex because we know it was him, Laughing Buddha. He was in your way reading his book. I think they have their hands are tied. They're doing the best that they can.
Well, they should be listening to podcasts instead.
Right. Fair enough.
I would just hate spending 8, 10, 12 hours a day sitting there driving a truck. It would drive me crazy.
Well, so I think it could only be.
But hold on, Mark. You don't even like driving 5 minutes, let alone 8.
That's why it's my worst nightmare.
Calvin, you were saying?
Oh, no. I think the only thing that would be worse is doing a taxi. So.
Yeah, you got me there. That would be worse.
Mm-hmm. Kathy Bacon.
I wasn't saying that anybody was trying to run anybody off the road. I'm saying that we're in their playground. They know they've got the upper hand. So they feel that most accidents are caused by incompetent car drivers, not they're the professionals. They know what they're doing. And car drivers are whipping in and out and being unsafe. And that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying truck drivers are out to kill us lame wads on the road.
I think that's what you were trying to say.
It's their realm, right?
Right. That's what I'm getting. Yeah.
Just remember, Brenda, it's the Tylenol talking.
I like him goofy. He's fun.
All right. Well, thank you for that interesting discussion, Laughing Buddha.
Well, there you go.
All right. So, guys, let's talk about the serious stuff here. Someone play a minor chord. Tonight on the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage, I want to talk about money and work and building wealth or living life, and how is that going to affect retirement? So I'm not sure we're going to get to every topic that's on the list tonight, but let me start the discussion off with this question to everybody. I want to know what you think is better. Do you think that you should work, buy a bunch of crap that you don't need, live a debt-filled life, and have lots of wonderful stuff? Or should you be more frugal and live a simple life and have very few possessions, live debt-free, and pile all that money into a mattress somewhere.
That's mattress.
And what provides a better quality of life? Living simple and debt-free, or living large and happy? Who wants to answer this question? I kind of would like to point it to Musing Mark, because I think we all know that Musing Mark lives a very different kind of life than what I appear to live.
Yeah, although I wasn't always so frugal and debt-free. I was broke for a while in my 20s, very struggling a lot financially, and I think that changed the way I viewed money. And I think during that period, if I'd had more money, I would have spent it all on junk anyway. So I didn't have a lot of money during this period, and I had to make do with my meager earnings, and there was a lot of stuff that I wanted to buy, but I couldn't because my credit cards were all maxed out. So I went through this tough period, and when I came out the other side of it and started to get better jobs and made twice, three times what I had been making, I was still living the same. And because I had more respect for money after this experience, and I really kind of lost a lot of the desire for stuff like I had when I was broke. And I think it was because things were so out of reach for me for so long that I stopped wanting them in a weird way. And so I think the tough times changed me probably for the better. And then when I started making more money, I pretty much lived cheaply like I did when I was broke. And I just think that there's a lot of freedom in being debt-free and having some financial security. And I think it's healthy. For me, it's a healthier way to live. And it provides a degree of freedom and security that I never had when I was broke and in debt to the credit card companies.
Right. So. Someone else, Brenda or Eric, any thoughts on this concept?
Well, I agree with what Mark just said, that when you are not able to have stuff for a long time, that when you finally get something, you've been waiting for it for so long, it's anticlimactic, and you kind of realize that stuff is not as important as it was. Is that what you're saying, Mark? But I don't think we should save so much that for a day that never comes, because it's like you could get sick and die and have this pile of money, and then what do you do with it? I mean, if you don't have kids or a charity you want to give it to, I think you should enjoy yourself, but I don't think you should enjoy yourself at the expense of having so much debt that if something does happen and you're incapacitated and you can't make any more money, that it sends your life upside down. Keeping that in mind, there's no such thing as debtor's prison anymore. So, I mean, that does give us some freedom to screw around with our credit if we feel the need to buy a Porsche or some such thing.
Yeah. I think people living way below their means it's pretty rare these days. My great grandparents did that. Like, they had millions and they led a really simple life, and they left all this money to their kids and their grandchildren, and who didn't really care about the money, and kind of a lot of it got blown. So I kind of want to fall between my grandparents and my parents, because my parents, as soon as they got anything, you know, it just ran through their fingers. So I want to enjoy life and spend enough, but I also don't want to spend it all now and then not have any when I need it, like 20, 30 years from now.
Yeah, and I think it's better to spend money on experiences rather than stuff. Now, like with Faye's cars, he has the stuff, but it provides the experience too, right?
Right.
So, like, if people are just collecting art, I mean, how long are you going to sit and stare at your wall? I don't see any value in, because you can go to any museum and still have the same pleasure of seeing art. So I think you need to be very careful what you do purchase with it. with the money you have.
Mm-hmm. Laughing Buddha, what are your thoughts on people either buying themselves happiness or living a frugal life?
Well, I think it comes down to living your values using money as a tool. And what I mean by that is I also had an experience where I found myself with $14,000 worth of credit card debt. And I'm, you know, at that time it was kind of buying in to that American dream of owning your own home. And I knew I needed to put some money aside in order to do that, but I was never making any headway on this credit card debt, even though I had a stable, relatively, you know, okay job that was, you know, I was paying the rent and putting food on the table and doing things, but I wasn't able to obtain this goal of home ownership because of this credit card debt. So I got some credit counseling and got myself on a repayment program. And about 4.5 years later, through discipline and learning how to budget and do things like that, I learned to live within my means. And then once the credit card debt was, you know, excused and was no longer a problem, then I could decide that I wanted to buy a house. So I think if you live within your means and you have a little bit of savings, it gives you a certain amount, like Mark said, freedom, but also flexibility. You know, I've been living within my means for so many years that, you know, the unexpected plumbing bill that I had in February wasn't a problem. It didn't create any more stress or anxiety because I had the money to fix the problem. Now, going through the experience of not having water and finding a plumber and doing all of that other thing would be complicated if I didn't have the money to pay, or if I had to figure out, okay, which credit card has enough, you know, room on it that I could charge it. Mm-hmm. So I think it comes down to you have to decide what your values are. Are you the kind of person that values having some money set aside to give you some sort of security, but at the same time allows you to, you know, heck, on a Wednesday night, you know, go over to a nicer than normal restaurant and have a fine meal and pay for it and have that experience, or take a weekend trip that, you know, you can go and visit friends. I think it gives you the opportunity, if you choose, to spend your money in a way that reflects what you value. So I'm in the Mark camp. I don't like a lot of stuff. The more stuff you have, the more energy you need to expend in order to take care of it. Yeah. And if that gives you pleasure, knock yourself out. But that's not where I am. That's not my personality. You know, I don't want to be, you know, having a maintenance schedule on a fleet of six European sports cars.
What are you saying?
Oh, nothing, Faye. Nothing. But, you know, I do enjoy my 2005 Buick LeSabre very much. Thank you.
Right.
But it's paid for.
As you should. Right.
Yeah. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Right. Laughing Buddha, I have to step away. Would you take over and maybe we can hear from Eric and Calvin what their thoughts are on living frugally or living the high life? I hope somebody is in favor of living the high life.
Okay.
I'll be back shortly.
Let's start with Calvin. Now, you've lived in various parts of the country. Kind of tell us a little bit about your story when it comes to money, some of the challenges that you faced, and where you're at now.
Oh dear. I grew up relatively. We didn't have a lot of money while my father was alive, but after he died, we had a bit more. So growing up, there was always a lot of sort of panic about money, and then I don't know. I mean, it's always seemed kind of, there's been ebbs and flows about whether there was a lot or not, but through early adulthood, it certainly seemed more like there's not so much. So I've definitely been in sort of a mode of trying to more make things meet. For me, I'm not a huge advocate of squirrel everything away, but I'm also not a huge advocate of stack up credit. My little way that I look at it is I want to live every day like I could die today or tomorrow, but also like I might live to be 120. And how do you do both at the same time?
Right. Exactly. How about you, Eric?
Yeah, as much as I would like to expand upon this, Mark, unlike the rest of this panel, I have someone across this table who knows my spending habits. And,
are you going to come clean, Eric?
Oh, I don't need to come clean because whatever I'm going to say will be rebutted or, put down by...
No, just go ahead. Say what you want to say. I don't care.
I myself... I'm horrible at spending. I am. Ask Brenda. You know, she will come. We go to a restaurant or something. She will find great joy at going to the gumball machines that have the little plastic ninjas and stuff inside.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Spend like $1.50 on that, and she will be gleeful. I buy a car.
All right.
And she will buy little craft and knickknack things from Michaels and say, "Oh, this is so cute." And I buy a big screen TV. It's I have no explanation for it. And I'm not necessarily possession driven because at the same time that I'm doing this, I don't buy the most expensive car. I try to find one that I think is reasonable. And within my earnings, I'm squirreling away a lot into retirement accounts and things like that.
Good for you.
Because, you know, I want to plan for it because Brenda's job doesn't allow her the benefit of having like a company-supported retirement program. So I'm trying to do that as well. Brenda and I, when we got married, we were, from the moment we became a family, we had a assload of debt.
It's all relative. I mean, a few thousand dollars is not an assload of debt.
It was more than a few thousand.
No, it wasn't.
But there was plenty of times in that first 2 years of our marriage where, you know, it really kind of was one of these things. Do you get gas for your car to go to work or do you buy
cigarettes.
Or groceries? You know, I remember a couple times when Mom would come over to the house and she wouldn't say hi to Brenda. She wouldn't say hi to me. She'd walk straight into the kitchen and open the cabinets, turn around, look at me and say, "Get in the car. We're going to the grocery store." So, I mean, I don't know.
That's what parents are supposed to do. Maybe we can talk about the evolution of the working person and how I'd like to hear from people how their careers have developed. I know... I was not fortunate enough to go to university, so I worked for most of my young life, and I had many different jobs. I jumped around from place to place because I had no clear vision of what I wanted to do in life. So in my 20s, I was bouncing around trying to find the right thing, and I went through several different things, and I don't regret any of the things that I did. But I didn't really center in on a career until I was into my mid-30s. And I finally sort of settled on a career, and I'm finding now in my 40s, I'm established in my career, and I'm really, I'm earning well right now. I'm able to maintain my vices and pay for the things that I want and maintain a life on the money that I earn. And then I'm expecting that I'm now that I'm going to be moving into my 50s, that that's going to be the time when I'm really going to knuckle down and start preparing for my retirement, because I've done nothing in my 20s and 30s to prepare for my 60s and 70s. So can other people tell us what their evolution of their career was, and did they have the same experiences? Mark, musing Mark.
Yeah, I think I was too poor in my 20s really to put much away for retirement. It started mostly in my 30s. And I think the statement is true that in our 50s we prepare for retirement, but I don't think that's when people should necessarily start squirreling away money. I think it should happen much earlier than that. But Mark gave us a link to an article that showed how unprepared Americans are for retirement. And I think it said, I have a quote here, for people 10 years away from retirement, the median savings was $12,000. So people in their 50s had $12,000 put aside for retirement. And if I was in my mid-50s and only had $12,000 socked away, I don't think I could sleep at night. So it seems like there's a real crisis in terms of people being completely unprepared to retire. And I think we're all going to end up paying for that.
Whether right. We're going to quick. Sorry yeah. to interrupt. I'm just going to put a link to that article in the chat room for those who might be in the chat room. Sorry to interrupt you, Mark.
But I just think that there is a crisis, and I think part of the reason that we need to save is not just to cover our own expenses, but I think that taxes are probably going to go up to cover all these people that have nothing, you know, in their old age. I think there's going to be a tidal wave of people looking to the government for some sort of benefits, because otherwise they're going to starve, and that will get the taxes up.
So. Right. Laughing Buddha, what's your take on this?
Well, you know, I was one of the first people in my family to attend a college. My sister went to a business school and she got a secretarial degree. My brother went to a vocational institute for maybe a year or two, and basically he decided that wasn't for him. So he kind of went into a blue-collar sort of trade kind of path. But I was the one who knew that an advanced degree like a bachelor's degree was a good thing to do, because it opened some doors. Now, I decided to get my degree in cultural studies and comparative literature. Yeah, okay. With an emphasis in art history, because I liked learning and I wanted to find a degree program that would hold my interest and through completion, and that I could do well. And, you know, I'm proud to say, as a senior in my program, I had a straight 4.0 GPA with a full load of classes and one or two part-time jobs on the side. Yeah. But unfortunately, you know, that sort of degree is a generalist degree. So I know a little bit about a lot of things. I also know how to think critically. I know how to write. But at that time, you know, the workforce kind of shifted where you needed to have a specialty or a very specific degree program. So I basically found a job in a travel office doing, you know, ticket processing work. It was an office job, which was different than the retail experience that I was doing prior to that. And then I basically went and found a job with public radio. And that's where I've been ever since. And, you know, that four-year degree, I don't regret getting that. What I regret is that I didn't take a very specific path. But then again, I wasn't in a position at that point in time saying, okay, this is what I want to do. So I kind of fell into what I'm doing. And if you've been listening to my podcasts lately, you know, I have a lot of job dissatisfaction at this point. And I'm going through a lot of soul searching and trying to find out what might be next in my career. I think careers these days are not a long-term arcing thing like our parents did, where they had the same job for 30 years and they retired. I think it's going to be several different things, and you have to have the kind of the skill set and the flexibility to be nimble in what you want to do in order to pay the bills. So those are my thoughts on the matter.
Mm-hmm. Eric, what do you think of this career arc? Did you have the typical similar career work life? Or
no.
What's your experience?
By comparison, when I was 15 years old and gave my first speech to an audience of about 4,000 people and realized that I could do that, I knew I wanted to do something in that design. And when I found out that I could get paid to talk and play music, mm-hmm. It was clear in my mind. I went to University of Iowa with the intent of getting a job in radio. Everything that has been in my path has always been with the notion that I wanted to be in radio. Brenda will tell you. I may have had other jobs, you know, selling TVs or helping to run a bookstore or running a Dairy Queen or running a Pizza Hut. I always had radio in the forefront of my mind.
I say Eric's been pretty fortunate that he had the skills and the opportunities, because from the moment he graduated college, he at least had a part-time job in radio, and he's been in radio ever since we've been married. So, I mean...
Well, even before that.
I know, but I'm saying...
Yeah.
You met some people that helped make it happen, but you had the skills to back it up. So, you've had a good combination of luck and
now
skills to get
as it. I've progressed... My role within the media has changed. I mean, I'm still on the air, and I still very much enjoy that and very much enjoy the creative process of writing, producing commercials and bits and things like that. But the tough decision for me was a year and a half ago when I decided I needed to step away from radio. And it wasn't because I failed to love the medium or what I did in it. It was a lack of confidence in the management at the time. Mm-hmm. And that was tough. But I think it was worth it. I mean, I'm in that person's position now. I will tell you that when I went to Sam's Club and spent the year in management there, I was earning more than I am now. Mm. But And maybe that's an important point. The passion wasn't there. I mean, we could talk. I mean, Laughing Buddha, you talk about having a certain amount of you know, I don't want to say disgruntled, but burnout. That's the term you used. I can honestly say that even on days where like today, where I get aggravated, knowing all the crap that I dealt with today. I still
relish in the moment, relish in the notion that on Monday I get to go back to the radio station.
Yeah. And that's
a lot.
That does.
So I don't, and Brenda, sometimes it boggles her mind and frustrates her because even on days off, I'm thinking radio. Even on vacation, I'm thinking radio. Yeah, it's just the way it is. We're driving down the road in a different city, and I start listening to other radio stations and commenting about how they're segueing into songs or how they write commercials and things like that.
I don't think that's what Faye wanted to talk about. He wanted to talk about the trajectory of your career. Now you're kind of going.
Well, no, but he has a passion too, and I understand that. I think that's extremely important.
But as a result of where I'm at right now, we're able to pay our bills. I'm able to squirrel something away. Radio is not the most lucrative profession in the world. Mm-hmm. So you don't earn as much as what people may think you're earning. But I think one of the things that Brenda and I have grappled with, and I think we've come to terms with it as well, is this living within our means thing. Now, we are not good at it, but...
I'm all right at it.
I'm horrible at it.
Okay, well, let's talk about that in a minute. I want to hear from Calvin and see what kind of career path you took from your... Well, you're actually maybe not as old as us old fogies here, for starters.
Right.
But,
hey, young whippersnapper.
I hate to say that my career trajectory of anyone in the potosphere, I've mostly felt empathetic with the little Aussie battler. I think we have a lot of things potentially in common in that regard. I don't even know if I ever even told anyone, but I feel like just recently, finally, I was able to like professionally have something happen. And then it wasn't like, you know, because of some magical thing I did. It just, you know, sort of came along. And at least when I listen to a lot of people's stories or listen to people on Lotsol or people in the past, even when they do have degrees, a lot of times it doesn't seem like the jobs that set off their careers necessarily were related necessarily to that education, which is why I think it's tough. I think it's a totally different game now. You have a very different set of like expectations for people coming out of school, especially because of the debt burden that people are facing.
Right.
And
Calvin, can you tell us what field you work in? Because I don't think many of us know. Maybe it's a big secret. I can't even tell.
It's from coal mining, of course.
Oh, coal mining, yes. In San Francisco.
Right. I've spent too much time in school. Undergraduate, I did sort of a hard science background. You know, it was very, in some ways, I believe, practical. And then, you know, I went on for an advanced degree and... I, you know, would probably take that back if I could, but, you know.
Can you tell us what you're doing now?
Well, I shuffle paper around and try and make people happy and come to an understanding. How's that?
Yeah, so you're an administrator of sorts then.
Sure, let's say it like that.
All right, well, we're not going to get it out of him, folks, but in any case, he does have a job. Helping
right.
people. Would you say helping people?
Well, I'd like it if they thought of it like that, but they probably think of it more as a hindrance. But,
okay. Yeah. All right. Are you happy with where you've ended up? I mean,
it sounds
to me like this is not where you ended. You thought you'd end up when you started your education, but here you have it. Here you are doing this job, quote, helping people. Is it taking advantage of your advanced degrees?
A touch. But at the same time, I feel really tremendously grateful, actually, in a way, that things did not turn out the way I kind of wanted or thought they might. So in a way, like my life would be so different and my like time schedule would be totally different if like the market I had entered or things like that had been what I was imagining it was going to be like. And in a lot of ways, I'm grateful that things didn't turn out like that, because I feel like it's really given me, I've seen some people who, you know, were, you know, in the school doing what I was doing and did, you know, manage to land themselves in, you know, what I thought I was hoping to do. And they were just absolutely miserable and had no lives whatsoever. And so it's a mixed, in some ways I, you know, I can't say, but it's very nice, you know, I guess.
So you liken yourself to Scotty, the little Aussie battler, who's been educating himself for somewhere around 30 years, it seems.
Okay, no.
He's into his 40s now, and he just got his first job.
Right.
Is that yours? Is this a similar situation for you?
No, I've been
years and years of education, or what?
Yeah, well, just about 7 after, you know, mm-hmm. high school. But no, I mean, I'll admit I played around a little bit in college, you know, with, you know, my extracurriculars and whatnot. But I didn't take any extra time with school, no. Mm-hmm.
Calvin, if you took a class where you had to go and watch movies and write a paper about it, that is perfectly acceptable. That's really going to take you places.
I did take that class.
I know I did that.
That was part of the communications curriculum.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about the passion that Eric has for his job. Do you have a passion for your job, Calvin? It sounds, I'm not convinced. It sounds to me like you're
convinced.
Doing this job because, I don't know, it sounds like a horrible job. You're helping people who don't think you're helping them.
Well,
what's the deal? Come on.
I'm very happy with what I'm doing, and I feel very fortunate. I really actually quite like what I do. I personally see what I do is, you know, to use horrible corporate speak, you know, adding value. But
are you advancing the mission?
I'm advancing the mission, yes.
The core values. There you go.
No, I really like it. And it's, but I'm pretty low key about all this sort of things. I don't have any dreams to change the world through my career or, you know, make it so that people, you know, have some sort of ecstatic experience because of what I do at work. So I'm a little bit more, I don't have very high expectations anymore about that.
Laughing Buddha, I know that you're not really happy in your work right now.
Well, it's the role that I currently have. And that's makes it tolerable to be in it because I still believe in public radio. I believe in what we produce. I think it's an important service. It's just my current role that I've been doing for 13 years that I'm a little burnt out on. I would be very happy learning other things, but staying within the organization. But unfortunately, that's very difficult to do because while we're larger than most public radio networks or stations, you know, opportunities don't come around very often. And those people who have success in changing departments or divisions or doing different things usually have a different temperament and personality, and they're able to create something, sell that something to the organization, and basically create themselves a position.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not my temperament. But, you know, I'm not saying that I'm all in a hurry to leave the organization. I would love to stay there, but just in a different capacity, because I honestly do believe in what we do.
Mm-hmm. Mark Musing, do you feel that a person needs to have a passion for the work they do? And do you have a passion for your work, or are you just doing your job?
It's somewhere between those two. I think passion is overrated. I think that I think if someone's really passionate about what they do, they're usually crazy. I mean, the people that I've known that are like that. And I think that there's a middle ground there. I really enjoy what I do because it keeps changing all the time, and I'm pretty much my own boss. I sort of tell my boss, okay, this is what we're going to get done this year, or what I'm going to get done this year. So, and I'm always learning new tools and things. So I have no complaints, really. But I think passion is a, I don't know, it doesn't really go so, my view of the world is a little different than that. Mm-hmm. I take more of, I'm like Calvin, more of a Buddhist approach. And Buddhists don't talk about passion very much.
Just in dealing with it in the terms of attachment and suffering, maybe.
Yeah. It's usually those sorts of extreme emotions and attachments are not usually something you want to hold on to. And passion is fleeting. I think it's, I like in my relationship to my job, sort of like my relationship with Mr. X, which is more steady as you go. And it's comfortable, and I feel like I'm making a difference, and it's really enhancing my life. But it's not like, you know, every bend over the sink or anything. I mean, it's a job.
Well, I hesitate to ask Brenda Boo, yes. Do you have a passion for your work, or do you feel that you should have a passion for what you do in your job?
Did you hear her saying shut up?
I didn't hear. Is she talking to me?
No, I haven't said anything yet. I think it's a good idea to at least to be able to more than tolerate your work. You might not have to live and die by your job, but I think it's a good idea to have be able to go in and not dread it and to feel like you're doing something that's important to at least somebody. So in terms of my job, I like the fact that there's a beginning, middle, and an end, that it does help somebody. The people that I clean for are very appreciative. But, you know, it is kind of, it's a double-edged sword, you know, going into people's, what do you want to say, Eric?
No, I was just going to say, I just got out of surgery. You really put me in a spot.
Yeah, so but I mean, I don't have a passion for cleaning, no, but it's a means to an end right now.
RT Cruiser says Brenda Boo has a passion for breaking knickknacks.
Well, you know that's true. I do like to ruin somebody's day if I get the chance. My mother brought that over, and it's the only thing I have left of hers. Well, it's missing a nose now, so yeah. I don't know, Faye.
Okay, well...
Faye, you never answered the question yourself.
He likes his job.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
But you said that you kind of floundered and then you found your cat. But, I mean, you think you found your home work-wise, have you not?
Oh, yeah. I hope to be doing the job I'm doing until I'm no longer able to do it. That's not necessarily going to occur, but I think I can... stick it out for another 13 years or however. Yeah, 13 years.
Hmm.
I am quite passionate about my job, and I think it is very important to have passion in your work, because work empowers us in many ways. It, you know, it's something that you are forced to do. You can't get through life without doing some kind of work to pay your own way. So I think if I'm going to have to do something, I want to do something that's fun and that I enjoy. So I feel extremely fortunate to be doing the work that I do. And in case people aren't aware, I work for the fire department. I send fire trucks out when people are in need, and I absolutely love it. It's a very technical job. And there's many things about it that I find extremely enjoyable.
Coolest work area.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great place to work. So And it's challenging work. It's mentally challenging. It's psychologically challenging, and it's a lot of fun. So, I absolutely am a proponent of enjoying what you do. I also, though, do recognize that work is work, and it's something that we do as a means to an end. So, if I didn't have to go to work every day, absolutely I wouldn't. But you know, this is how we get the things we want.
I just have seen Mr. X turn himself inside out trying to find the perfect job, and it's really painful to watch somebody do that. And I don't think he's the only one. I think in North America there is this idea that live your passion and make sure you have a job that, you know, that you're passionate about. And now it's like he's just happy to find a job, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think some of that thinking, I mean, it's great if you can find a job that you enjoy and are passionate about, but is someone really going to be passionate about picking up the garbage or, you know, all these jobs that need to get done? You know, probably not. So I tend to think passion is a bit overrated.
Yeah, but, you know, you don't need to be shooting fireworks every time you leave the house in the morning. I mean, but I think, you know, you have to have some joy in your work, and you're right.
Yeah.
I've not enjoyed every single work that I've had, every job I've had either, because sometimes you got to do the shit jobs to get your way through until you find that job. And I think one of the problems that culture and society puts on us is that you have to be an expert, or you have to be the best you can be, and you have to do this fantastic job, and everybody should go through 7 years of education and get their overrated degrees, Calvin, and work in a job that they can't tell anybody what they do. For
don't
the NSA
Calvin.
Or whatever it is. But
let's not socially shame Calvin.
I don't mean to pile it on Calvin, but I think there's too much societal pressure for everybody to have the best job in the world.
Yeah, I agree.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Okay. It's a bill of goods.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Do we want to talk about retirement, or should we bring the show to a close?
I have to go pretty soon. Is that okay? Sorry.
That's fine.
Maybe we'll save that for another time. We can kind of do the old business, new business sort of thing on the next show.
Okay. Well, then let me make my public service announcement. You may have heard on some Drive Time Tinopas or some other shows somewhere else, I'm not sure. My life here at the castle has gotten quite busy, so I'm going to put a little warning out for people. You may have heard me talking about this on the Pink Wheel Nuts podcast from inside the car. This episode here tonight on the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage will be the last episode for probably a month at the minimum, because my work schedule is coming back into Fridays. So I'm going to be working Fridays at least up until the middle of April. So we're not going to have a Pink Wheel Nuts Garage for some time. But I also want to give people the heads up that I'm getting increasingly busy in my life. And you may be hearing a little less and less of me on the podcasting network. So I don't want people to get alarmed. I'm not going away. I'm just changing my focus a little bit into other things. So, and then I'm just giving you that heads up that the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage will be gone for a few weeks. So, all right. Anybody have any questions on that? Any comments? Does anybody want to say anything about anything else we've talked about tonight on the career show on the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage?
I think it's a great topic. I'm glad you brought it up.
All right. So we'll go around the room then, and we'll get everyone to tell us where we can find you. Let me see. Let me start with Musing Mark. How can we find you on the internet?
Yes, my podcast is Musings of a Tech Writer, which is available on the iTunes, and my website is musingsofatechwriter.com. Thank you.
You bet. And thanks for joining us tonight, Mark. I hope you're feeling better.
Thank you.
Eric, how can we find you in your passionate job?
Every Monday through Friday from 9 until noon Central Time. You can find me online at kmryradio.com.
How can we find you, Brenda?
Me and my many podcasts are on Brenda. What? Hello again. It's brendaboo.com. And then lots of life on the shit list.
Calvin, where can we find you, sir?
Oh, once again, just go to the link on Big Fatty's site. Much easier.
Right. That's bigfattyonline.com.
Right. I've never gone to bigfatty.com. I don't know what all the horror is about.
Right, you don't want to go. Or you could stop by the NSA office in San Francisco. That's where you're going to find Calvin hanging out.
Indeed.
I am the Faye Driver. Thanks for joining us tonight, everybody, on the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage. We'll see you sometime in April for another garage show, hopefully. And the man who always has the last word, it is the Laughing Buddha.
That's right. I am the Laughing Buddha, the co-host emeritus, and you can find me at thescooterdiaries.net. You can also find me on Twitter as Laughing Buddha. That's LaughingBuddha. Good night, everybody.
Bump, bump.
You didn't fix that problem. You had an hour to fix that problem.
Well, that's right.
I don't know what it is.
Hello, Pink Wheel, that's garage.